Chapter 25. I didn't have much left in me in the way of magic. I wouldn't until I had a chance to rest and recuperate from what Nicodemus had done to me. I might have been able to manage a spell that would hold a normal person, but not a hungry vampire. And that was what Susan was. She'd gained strength in more senses than the merely physical, and that never happened without granting a certain amount of magical defense, even if in nothing but the naked will to fight. Snake Boy's Serpent Cloud had been one of the nastier spells I'd seen, and it had only slowed Susan down. If she came at me, and it looked like she might, I wouldn't be able to stop her. My motto, after the past couple of years, was to be prepared. I had something that I knew could restrain her, assuming I could get past her into the drawer where I kept it. "Susan," I said quietly. "Susan, I need you to stay with me. Talk to me." "Don't want to talk," she said, her eyelids lowered and she inhaled slowly. "I don't want it to smell so good. Your blood, your fear. But it does." "The fellowship," I said. I struggled to rein in my emotions. For her sake, I couldn't afford to feel afraid. I edged a little toward her. "Let's sit down. You can tell me about the fellowship." For a second, I thought she wouldn't give way, but she did. "Fellowship," she said. "The fellowship of St. Giles." "St. Giles," I said. "The patron of lepers." "And other outcasts, like me?" "They're all like me."
"You mean infected?"
"Infected. Half turned. Half human, half dead. There are a lot of ways to say it."
"Uh-huh," I said. "So what's their deal?"
"The Fellowship tries to help people the Red Court has harmed. Work against the Red Court. Expose them whenever they can."
"Find a cure?"
"There is no cure."
I put my hand on her arm and guided her toward my couch. She moved with a dreamy deliberation. "So the tattoos are what, your membership card?"
"A binding," she said. "A spell cut into my skin, to help me hold the darkness inside, to warn me when it's rising."
"What do you mean, warn you?" She looked down at her design-covered hand, then showed it to me. The tattoos there and on her face were slowly growing brighter and had turned a shade of medium scarlet.
"To warn me when I'm about to lose control. Red, red, red. Danger, danger, danger."
The first night she'd arrived, when she'd been tussling with something outside, she stayed in the shadows for the first several moments inside, her face turned away. She'd been hiding the tattoos. "Here," I said quietly. "Sit down." She sat on the couch and met my eyes.
"Harry," she whispered, "it hurts. It hurts to fight it. I'm tired of holding on. I don't know how long I can."
I knelt down to be on eye level with her. "Do you trust me?"
"With my heart, with my life."
"Close your eyes," I said. She did. I got up and walked slowly to the kitchen drawer. I didn't move quickly. You don't move quickly away from something that is thinking about making you food. It sets them off. Whatever had been placed inside her was growing. I could feel that, see it, hear it in her voice. I was in danger, but it didn't matter, because so was she. I usually keep a gun in the kitchen drawer. At the time, I had a gun and a short length of silver and white rope in there. I picked up the rope and walked back over to her. "Susan," I said quietly, "give me your hands." She opened her eyes and looked at the soft, fine rope.
"That won't hold me."
"I made it in case an ogre I pissed off came visiting. Give me your hands." She was silent for a moment, then she shrugged out of her jacket and held her hands out, wrists up. I tossed the rope at her and whispered, "Manicus." I'd enchanted the rope 6 months before, but I'd done it right. It took barely a whisper of power to set the rope into motion. It whipped into the air, silver threads flashing, and bound itself around her wrists in neat loops. Susan reacted instantly, going completely tense. I saw her set herself and strain against the ropes. I waited, watching for a full half a minute before she started shaking and stopped trying to break them. She let out a shaking breath, her head bowed, hair fallen around her face. I started to move toward her when she stood up, legs spread enough to brace herself firmly, and tried again, lifting her arms. I licked my lips, watching. I didn't think she'd break the ropes, but I'd underestimated people before. Her face, her two black eyes, scared me. She strained against the ropes again, the movement drawing her shirt up, showing me her smooth brown stomach, the winding swirls and barbs of her tattoo red and stark against her skin. There were dark bruises over her ribs and patches of skin that had been scraped raw. She hadn't come away from our tumble from Martin's car without being hurt after all. After a minute more, she hissed out a breath and sat down, hair a tumbled mess around her face. I could feel her eyes on me more than I could actually see them. They didn't feel like Susan's eyes anymore. The tattoo stood out against her skin, red as blood. I backed off, again deliberately, calmly, and got the first aid kit out of the bathroom. When I came back out, she flung herself at me in blinding speed and utter silence. I'd been expecting as much and snapped, "Fusari!"